You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Wisconsin kids head back to school over the next couple of weeks. It can be a challenging time of year for any student, but some Wisconsin children face a unique set of challenges because they don't conform to what people expect when it comes to gender roles.
Earlier this summer, we heard about a Frontline documentary on the lives of transgender children. One of the kids the documentary followed was named Arielle, and here she is talking a little about her experience.
It's harder teasing and bullying wise when you're a girly boy, when you're in that in-between stage, than when you fully transitioned. It's much harder to be gender non-conforming than to be transgender, because when you're gender non-conforming, that is when really a lot of difficulties set in.
Our next guests have studied the experiences of transgender and non-conforming children in Wisconsin schools. They released their findings in a report earlier this year. Maurice Gaddis is an assistant professor of social work at UW-Madison. Maurice, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us on the show.
And Sarah McKinnon is an assistant professor of communication arts at UW-Madison. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So for this report, you talked to transgender and non-conforming students and their parents around the state. Why, Maurice, was it important to get that firsthand perspective?
Yes, we have really reached out to the community to find out what perspectives we need to be identifying with regard to transgender and gender nonconforming students. And we talked with various stakeholders throughout the state and realized that there wasn't much information. And getting firsthand accounts from the students from a variety of backgrounds and grades, socioeconomic statuses, races, as well as from their parents and school officials to really find out what some of these rich, unique experiences that were facing transgender and gender nonconforming students in Wisconsin schools. So we thought that having a systematic approach to collecting data from these youth would help us illuminate and understand some important themes and findings of the unique challenges facing gender nonconforming and transgender students here throughout the state of Wisconsin.
We'll get into those themes in a few moments, but Sarah, first, when we use the phrases transgender and non-gender conforming, who are we talking about?
Yeah, so, transgender is really... I think it's important to acknowledge that this is a term that's in flux. All terms when we're talking about gender identity are in flux, but this usually refers to individuals whose gender identity and expression doesn't match the assigned sex that they were given at birth. And so there's this dynamic that exists between gender and sex. And so this is an important thing to tease out. Those that are gender nonconforming this can be a lot of things, right? It can be individuals who identify as gender neutral or gender non-binary, meaning that they don't identify with either binary of the kind of normative genders that we use. And so these terms are really used flexibly and in flux. And so in some ways, I think it's really important to not tie down what the words mean.
And as we heard from Arielle in that piece from Frontline, bullying and harassment can be a problem for students in this position. As you looked at this, and both you can talk about this, we'll start with Maurice, how common was that among the students you talked to?
Well, yes, one of the things that did emerge was bullying and harassment. We also know from national data that bullying and harassment is prevalent among transgender and gender nonconforming youth. And more specifically, we also know sometimes some of the bullying that happens around gender nonconformity actually is happening to just heterosexual students who are actually being sort of gender policed and not behaving in ways in which people, society has ascribed gender.
So a boy being not perceived as masculine enough, for example.
Exactly.
That's right.
And so to get more specific into our study, yes, bullying was a part of the study. It was mentioned by many of the participants, and it came from multiple domains. Some people were bullied by other youth at school. Some received some perceived bullying from staff and administration as well. So this was a piece. And another theme that emerged around the bullying was the idea of technology and how technology allowed for people to be accessed 24 hours a day. And it could be, there was a time where people didn't have this kind of access. So you would leave school and now there's Facebook messages, there was a Twitter text, there was a text, there was text bullying. So it was in person at school, but it also happened outside of school in the bedroom, right? If you're on the phone and you get a bullying harassed text message, that's happening in your bedroom. And that could be from people who you've interacted with at school. So we did have a finding around bullying and harassment, and like I said, it extended with this technology component.
And beyond that, I've seen statistics in your report, actually, non-gender-conforming students, transgender students, more likely to be disciplined and suspended in school. And does that come because, in part, they're being bullied, they're finding themselves in situations that they're reacting to?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a really complex situation that's important to parse out. In part, they're being, I think we might theorize this as they're being targeted for discipline because they're identified as someone who's involved in the situation, right? Anytime you're seen as not normative, you're more likely then to be visible. And you're not just visible to your peers, you're also visible to those administrators, you know, security officials in schools. And so that's a dynamic that I think it's important to acknowledge and then also to think about when developing policies around discipline, developing policies around bullying. One of the things that our study doesn't get into but that is addressed in other research is that oftentimes trans and gender nonconforming youth are more likely to be the targets of discipline policies around things like bullying. And so we don't want to doubly penalize trans students when they're also stridently the victims of a lot of these sorts of acts in schools.
We're talking to Sarah McKinnon and Maurice Gaddis from UW-Madison about their report and ongoing research on the experiences of transgender and non-gender conforming children in Wisconsin schools. Let's stay with the staff for a moment. Now, we've painted this as challenges. You highlight some positive stories of what staff members at schools did as well. Sarah, can you talk about what you would point to as maybe model behavior for staff at schools?
Yeah, you know, we really found a lot of the students that we spoke with had one or two school staff that they could speak to about their transition, about their experiences as being trans in school. These were counselors, these were teachers, sometimes these were principals. And when these adults were in the student's life, by and far it made school life better. And so these individuals were really important, and the students talked a lot about that. In terms of the actions and the behaviors that these adults did that made a positive environment, it was things like using the student's preferred name, using the student's preferred gender pronouns, asking, what do you need from me and how can I facilitate that? So just being an advocate by modeling behavior, but then also making sure to ask the right questions.
And you say made the school a happier place. On the sadder side, some of the stories you heard, statements like, I avoid the cafeteria. I would like to not go to school. I miss school because of my fear of school sometime. How big an impact do bullying and the other problems we'll talk about have on the daily school lives of students, Maurice?
Yes, that theme, the theme of safety and health and wellness in the school environment did really emerge. And thinking about ways in which some of the youth talked about keeping themselves safe, sometimes that meant avoiding going to school just to not have to have these negative interactions. Sometimes that meant avoiding certain teachers, certain faculty members. Sometimes that involved perhaps taking weapons for fear of being attacked and for a defense. A specific example of, we think about unique challenges in safety and learning environment. Think of an example of a student who was in the middle of taking an exam, and the principal of the school came in during the exam to take them to the office to tell the student, I want to talk to you about transitioning, and I want you to stop transitioning. It is having a negative impact on your performance. Your friends don't like it, right? So this is a unique and specific, we think of something called minority stress theory, which actually are environmental cues that may negatively impact the mental health of youths, particularly transgender and gender non-conforming youth. So this would be an example of a very specific and unique piece whereby the student's learning experience was disrupted to talk about transitioning, which is a unique experience for youth who are transitioning, who are deciding to transition.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, and some of the national data really speaks to this as well. So, for example, trans youth are 20% more likely to be harassed, called names, made fun of, bullied than their cisgender peers. There are 45% have experienced suicide ideation, meaning that they've thought about suicide, and a third have attempted suicide. These are alarming statistics, and so it's really important to think about how do we work to make the lives of trans youth better in our schools.
And I wanted to get into another area of concern, a thing a lot of kids take for granted, maybe look forward to, participating in sports in schools. This is not an easy issue for transgender children. What would you like to see schools do to be ready to answer this question when it comes up?
Well, that's a very good question. This did emerge, and it becomes complex in that school districts throughout the state have different policies, right, involving locker rooms, physical facilities, bathrooms. So it is complex in that each school has sort of, district has autonomy, and there really is no sort of statewide policy on it. Having said that, the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association did come out with a policy position on appropriate locker room and assignment for transgender and gender nonconforming students. So when you ask what would we like to see, there's just, well, from our data that emerged, we saw what was sort of uneven support, and students and parents talked about the fact that they had to make school officials aware that there is a policy. And then once that awareness happened, people began to understand that they had to help navigate what that means. So part of it is the awareness that WIAA policy exists. And the other piece is helping, making sure that administrators know this exists and providing training and opportunities for effective implementation. And that is something that we are doing this fall. We're beginning to look at policy implementation, not just around sports and locker rooms and facilities, but around how do districts deal with student gender student non-discrimination policies specifically for gender non-conforming and transgender students. But it's that idea of either A, when there's a policy in place, working to implement it effectively, and then B, if you identify policy gaps, having the community discussion around what the policy, how the policy should be implemented, what needs it should address.
Yeah, Gender Spectrum is a national organization that just released a kind of a guide for helping schools to think about how to meet the needs of trans and gender nonconforming youth. And one of the themes in this guide is about athletics. And I think they do a really nice job of working through some of the questions and the programs and the ideas that schools may need to think about. So I really recommend that as a resource.
We're talking to Sarah McKinnon and Maurice Gaddis from the UW-Madison. They're co-authors of the report, School Experiences of Transgender and Gender Nonconforming Students in Wisconsin.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Was this your experience in school, or maybe your child's experience? What challenges did you see, and how did you respond? If you work in the schools, how do these issues play out in your district? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation after a look at the latest news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We continue our conversation with UW-Madison professors Maurice Gaddis and Sarah McKinnon. They're the co-authors of a report about transgender and gender nonconforming students in Wisconsin schools.
You can join the conversation about the challenges facing kids who don't conform to what people see as common gender roles. Call in now at 800-642-1234. Is this a concern right now in your family as you get ready for back-to-school season? Have you experienced these issues as a student, a parent, a teacher, an administrator? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Another one of your recommendations in the report, Sarah, is for more support organizations in schools. Why do those make a difference?
Yeah, the students really spoke a lot about how much of a difference it made when there was an organization like a GSA, which is a Gay Straight Alliance, in their school, or when there were LGBT affirmative school programs. And so these are things that the students actually identified as making their lives better. And so we found that to be, you know, a likely recommendation for us to take up in listening to the students.
And you looked at schools around the state. How common are those organizations?
It's a good question. We know that most of the students in our study actually had GSAs and mentioned organizations like GSAs. And GSAFE here in Madison, Madison-based, is a statewide organization, and they keep data on the number of GSAs statewide. I believe there are approximately 162. There's somewhere around there. In addition to organizations like GSAFE and having Gay Straight Alliances, we also saw the importance of social support in the school, be it a teacher, friends, parents. So the idea of acceptance and social support in both formal settings like GSAs and GSAFEs, some people call them gender sexuality alliances and organizations of the like, also informal social support does provide, the students said, provide sort of meaningful, positive experiences for them.
Go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. Kevin is with us in Madison. Kevin, hi.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to briefly discuss my personal experience in high school. Growing up, I had initially come out as gay because that's what I believed I was, and realized I was more transgendered. Now I understand that I am transgendered. And in high school, very often I would dress in girls' clothes because that's what I felt more comfortable wearing, as opposed to the standard boys' clothes and things of that nature. And I would do that regularly. And the faculty didn't know how to handle that very well, and generally would consider me a distraction to the classroom or a distraction in the hallways, and therefore I would be reprimanded because of the clothes I chose to wear, where I may be wearing the exact same clothes other girls in the school would be, or in the same classroom, where they actually may be wearing something more distracting or sexually provocative, where I was just simply wearing girls' shorts or girls' tops, and then I would be asked to go to the principal's office.
And Kevin, can I ask how long ago was this that you were in high school?
This was in the late 90s.
Okay. Kevin, thank you so much for sharing your experience. I wonder, that's, 15, 20 years ago. Would this still be the same story today?
Yeah, I think Kevin's experience is an important one to identify. And this connects with what I was talking about earlier about how trans youth are oftentimes identified as the troublemakers, identified as the problems for being trans or for being for straying from the norm. And so that's why consideration about discipline policies and programs are so important to really think through the nuances of, and to ask ourselves, like, who's going to be targeted by this discipline program or policy?
Also, in addition to what Sarah mentioned, which is very important, the idea of schools with dress codes. Dress codes are often gendered and throughout districts, and of course each district is different, but it's not uncommon to have gendered dress codes, and they are gender binary, male and female. And we know that gender exists on a continuum. And so what Kevin, the caller, was referring to also has this idea of the idea that men, according to a dress code, have to wear certain clothing, and then women are going to have to wear certain clothing as well. And so that did emerge as a theme in our study, youth talking about this, the distraction, the dress code that is gendered. And also that does move to national, right? We see national headlines. There was a female student who wanted to wear a tuxedo, who was banned from the prom, not allowed to wear a tuxedo, right? And a tuxedo is appropriate clothing to wear. So yes, in addition to the targeting with the discipline, and this is why the report recommends different disciplinary procedures, thinking about restorative justice, but also the dress code piece that is gendered and gender binary, and thinking through what this looks like and who is targeted perhaps unfairly with these kinds of dress codes.
Now, at a couple points over the last year in the national press, we've seen the case being made that we are in a transgender moment in the United States. We're seeing a sudden substantial change in attitudes towards transgender adults and maybe kids. Do you see that in talking to the kids themselves, to parents, to staff at schools? Are you seeing a change going on right now?
I think we are seeing a change. And for me, it's really exciting to see gender being deconstructed and then re-embodied and rethought in these really interesting ways. All of our lives, most of us have been told gender is two things, right? Male or man, woman. And so to rethink gender as a continuum and as a way of expressing ourselves, I think is really exciting. And so I believe that we're going to continue to see multiple manifestations, probably things that are unimaginable to us right now, as we think about this transgender movement and moment.
And Maurice, do you see this translating into policy at the school level, maybe at the state level?
I do see that it has potential to influence policy at the school and state level. Here in Wisconsin, we have seen over the past 3 years, more schools adopting non-discrimination policies in their pupil procedures that do include gender identity and gender expression. Currently at the state level, the non-discrimination policy only protects sexual orientation, so gay, lesbian, and bisexual students. It does not protect gender identity, so gender non-conforming and transgender students. But we have seen, like I said, particularly at the local level, we've seen these changes and school districts actually having these conversations. Like I said, our upcoming studies this fall will begin to look at these policy implementations and procedures and how this is happening.
Maurice, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sarah, thanks to you as well.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We've been talking to UW-Madison professors Maurice Gaddis and Sarah McKinnon. They're co-authors of the report and working on a book. I hope I can leak that. The report was School Experiences of Transgender and Gender Nonconforming Students in Wisconsin.